dancing underwater. Every morning the land distends, knowing nothing of then or when. Ice melts and freezes and melts again, while the earth tilts in one direction or another. As the Great Lakes fishermen peering across water, he watches as Asian carp thrust themselves upwards. Reptilian monsters, they suck out sections of the sky as the day slips down like a summer dress, barely hanging on to its cheap wire hanger, indifferent to the tilting, the fishermen, and me. The other night, such a reptilian dream drank from my marrow as dark dreams do, of large sand dollars and sea stars missing their mouths, open clams and shiny blue-black mussels emptied of meat, stranded in tide pools and yet breathing, living in ocean's puddles, the sand and me. Still, I continue to wish that carbon dioxide emissions stop, the ozone layer ceases its shrinking, and Asian carp return to where they came from. I am not asking for much, only that fish find the fullness of their gills again, here in some small part of southwest Michigan where worsening often follows more of the same. The bluegill, the bass, smallmouth and largemouth, the perch and salmon, the catfish and all bottom feeders dance beneath the surface while the sky turns from blue to black and the world sits in all its glory.
Measuring the Marigolds, we're going to focus on your poetry collection because it's quite new, but that's not all you write. You write a little bit of everything.
That's
poetry,
right.
Prose, nonfiction, four books, is that right?
Right.
Okay.
Oh, well, this would be the fifth.
This will be the fifth.
Right.
And one of the ones that I had the pleasure of reading is a children's book, which I believe was your first book.
Right.
So why don't we talk about what those four books are, and then we'll zone in on your poetry.
While my kids were young, I began with poetry. So this is not a far reach from what I initially did. In high school, I remember a poem I wrote that said, "I am a woman, no longer a child." I think I was 14. Anyway, I began with poetry, was writing poetry in college. And I had lived in Israel at the time and actually belonged to a group of poets that published quite a good deal after I did my master's and my doctorate and really didn't have creative writing time, and then had children, or very young children. So while I was doing non-tenure track work at Southwest Missouri State, I was not writing. And when I got a tenure track job here at Western, I picked it up again. My kids were still little, and I started writing children's material. I was teaching English education. It all fit in very well. So I taught children's literature and wrote a children's book. And I think I really found out by writing to the format. I understood format much better because I was dealing with format with my students. So I knew it was 32 picture book pages. I knew they were runs of eight. What I didn't realize, or I knew but found it very difficult, was to write simply for young kids. So the first book came, Sea, Salt, and Air, came out as a family story. And it is still, actually, it's somebody recorded it on YouTube. I found it quite lately. I went, well, that's interesting. But I realized also that it's very difficult for me to write small. And so then I did a middle grade novel when my kids were in middle school. And then when my eldest was in high school, I went to the YA, the young adult novel.
Oh, that's interesting how your interests grow along with your children.
And I think I was more and more capable of doing something much larger. And probably that was my most famous work because it got the Scott Odell Award, Two Suns in the Sky. And then I retired and really stopped for a while, was continuing to act once a year all around the community. I was acting sometimes twice a year and doing other things, gardening, just dealing with a different reality, more of almost farm reality. I joined a writer's group and then went back. And when my kids left, I really was involved in sort of empty nesting, what it meant to be retired, what it meant not to have kids anymore, just a different life, a really different life. And so over a course of quite a few years, almost 10, I would say, I wrote poems, rewrote poems, And then there was a point at which I realized it really had to come out. Mm. I could not tinker. With poetry, you can just tinker forever if you want to.
This is true.
Caffeinated Press took some of my poems in their 3288 semi-annual, and they did a really good job, and their focus is on Southwest Michigan. So I went, well, this is it. This is a poetry of Southwest Michigan.
It is, yeah.
It's nature connected to growth, change, personal transformation.
And when you mention your children, there's a lot of longing there and observing your children grow and leave the nest.
Right. I don't know if you ever totally get over that. I mean, now I'm a grandma, so there's that wonderful aspect of that. I don't know if you totally, when you see young children and you see them doing these things, you know, it was such a big part of your life.
Yeah.
You know, that I don't know if that changes, but that sense of real loss, that's changed. I don't feel that way anymore. I mean, no. And I think this really helped me to kind of put some things to rest and do something very personal. And then, because I don't tend to be really personal. The first book was very personal.
Yeah.
And this book was very personal, but my others were fiction. And so I'm sort of ready to go back to the less personal.
Okay.
Yeah,
do you
have
a project in the works now?
Yeah, I do. I have a picture book. Here we go.
So you're going back to children?
Yes.
Well, you've got a grandchild now.
Yeah. And also, I did the flowers for my son's wedding, and I got into the connectivity of the self with the earth, with how everything needs everything else.
When you say Michigan and Southwest Michigan, there's a lot of that in this collection, Measuring the Marigolds. And a lot of the wildlife and the animals that you see in this area, the birds, the loons, the sandhill cranes, rabbits and horses, and horses, in fact, that gets a little bit of extra focus. Do you have horses at home? You seem to have a very close connection.
Not now. I did. I was always on an acre, so I boarded. But over a period of 10, 15 years, I had one horse at a time. And one horse that I spent a good deal of time training. And that was wonderful. It was really wonderful. Having horses is like digging a hole and pouring money down it. I love horses, but they're very expensive. Chickens is much cheaper
than
horses. And they give you eggs. No, horses give you a lot emotionally, but it's always nice to have eggs.
And weather poems. In fact, the cover on this shows snow. And maybe because we're talking in the middle of the polar vortex as we sit here, a lot of snow poems. So I thought that was very Michigan.
Right. The cover is our block. So I took the photograph.
Oh, okay.
And it seems to me to connect to the poem, too, that's just a road. And that also represents this kind of stretching out the future and also the past. The empty garbage cans, you know, the thing that... And also the bald hornet's nest. So you see on the top of it, we actually had a bald hornet's nest in our back porch. And I've always liked the winter when you see where animals were, where birds were, which you might not have noticed before. So that fascination with this is where they lived. I didn't see it. It's kind of peering into something that you didn't see, like looking underwater.
And there's a little bit of a story that goes with the title, Measuring the Marigolds, and where that comes from, the inchworm that we all know about. Can you talk about the title and why you chose that?
In the very beginning, actually, of the book, too, I make a statement, and I say that it's a song from the 1952 film Hans Christian Andersen. And at that point, Danny Kaye played Hans Christian Andersen. And Measuring the Marigolds is a song that, to me, represents the difference between quantitative life and qualitative life. Yeah. So the last stanza says, inchworm, inchworm, measuring the marigolds. Seems to me you'd stop and see how beautiful they are. And it was also a song we sang back in...
I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. I loved singing it.
And the title poem itself is a moving piece about your mother.
Right.
Family plays a big role in your work, from children to mother, generations.
Probably that particular piece, I thought I did a better job when I did for the... a few years ago, when I actually made nonfiction, creative nonfiction out of it, and did the art of tending African violets. And then I was really able to deal with my mother in sort of a longer way.
Yeah.
And I think a more mature way. But I still felt that I wanted to do this particular poem because my mother was a violinist and she measured a lot. And she was quite good, and she was able to play in these 30 seconds and 64ths, and, you know, and she was very mathematically inclined, which I think you need to be when you are a musician. So it was in, and of course, when I wrote it, and when this came out, my mother was no longer living. So it was a sort of in homage of my mother, who also was an extremely patient person. Much more than I am. I mean, had the ability to be extremely patient. So I do. And there's a poem about my brother, too, because he died so suddenly. And I planted a pear tree in our backyard in his honor so that every time the pears come out, I think about him. So, yes, there is the bit of the family, the generational thing, my kids, my parents.
You can feel that measured movement of time by reading about your family, the coming and going, the nests and the empty nests and all of that that moves through your work.
I think what's important in this manuscript, too, are there are a couple pieces, one of them particularly a prose poem, where suddenness enters into the thing, the suddenness of nearly being assaulted, the suddenness of the snowstorm, where some kids die because of the ice, the suddenness of the ice storm.
Yeah.
You know, so there's this sort of beautiful nature, and then there are these occurrences that are somewhat violent and somewhat sudden that come and go.
Yeah, beauty and danger lurking just behind.
Yeah. Right.
Talk about your roots a little bit. You mentioned earlier that you lived in Israel for a while.
Yeah, I went to college there.
Okay. Are you from Michigan or?
No, I'm from Pennsylvania.
Ah.
My mother's family was from Worcester, Massachusetts. And my father's family was from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
And how did you find your way to Western?
Well, it's no longer Southwest Missouri State, but when I was writing my dissertation, I was at, I think that's now called Missouri State University in Springfield, and my dissertation was in Shakespeare. And it was not... play and games. So in some element, I was still dealing with the aspect of kids, of play and staging, which is something I've always been interested in. And it was a five-year non-tenure track. And the last year I applied, I was almost finished with my dissertation, and I applied for Shakespeare positions, and I applied for children's lit because I had been teaching.
Two very different directions you could have gone.
Very different. Yeah. I had been teaching one children's lit course a term. The head of the department was a children's literature expert. And I tutored under him and then started doing it myself. And they were very different. And it's funny because the guy who was here ended up at Southwest Missouri State and I ended up at Western. We kind of shifted places. I always thought that was kind of funny. But it was a small community. I got the English ed job here.
Yeah, Shakespeare or children's literature. How do you choose, since you have talents in all these different ranges of writing, this idea belongs in a children's book, this idea belongs in a poem? Do they sometimes intersect? The same idea may make its way into an adult poem that can also make itself in a children's book? How do you choose?
I think it begins with who is my audience. That may seem backwards in a way, but who do I want to talk to? And if I want to talk to adults and I have an adult thematic than, like, Measuring the Marigolds. I would never think to have this as a children's piece. It's adult. Yeah, it really has to do with the material. I don't feel fixed on. There are things I don't write because I know I have no talent in them.
Okay.
I don't write fantasy. I'd love to be J.K. Rowling and write fantasy, which is so popular now.
Yeah.
I've tried some mysteries. I'm really quite bad at it. So there are things that I don't do very well, and I don't.
When you work on them, do they crisscross at all in the sense that you might have a children's book manuscript going at the same time that you have a poem in the works? Or do you focus on just one thing?
I focus on just one thing. Yeah, I really focus on just one thing. I tend to, it's not that I don't multitask, but when I get something in my mind, I just want to do that and I want to finish it. And then I do something else. I'm very much sort of incremental. I used to call myself a donkey. You know, it's sort of like
a donkey.
Well, sort of like how I got through my PhD, you know.
Stubborn and trudging along,
going up the hill, yeah. Trudging along.
Oh, that's interesting. That's a children's book, I think.
Slow and steady wins the race.
Yeah. And then you've got this other interest of theater.
Right.
How does that work alongside? Do you consider writing your life's work and theater is a hobby, or is it also a life?
Well, neither of them have afforded me much money. So
teaching
has always been the money, which is very interesting. I really enjoy teaching. I think I started theater when I was in high school. Usually the chorus. All these musicals I did, it was always the chorus. And I'm a ham. So I'm truly a ham. And when I was in Pittsburgh, I did comedies. And when I was in Boston, I did comedies. And I did comedies here. I don't try to be really funny, but I'm really funny.
It just happens.
It happens. So yeah. I've never had the role of, you know, the beautiful woman with it. It's always been the comedian, which is a lot more fun anyway.
So it sounds like your life could have gone in two different directions. It went into literature, teaching literature. You might have taught drama.
Yeah. Oh, I remember when I graduated from college. I was in Israel, and I was thinking of applying to RADA and some other very new, not new anymore, but new company in England, because I was in England for a very short time after I left Israel. But I remember walking up the stairs and just feeling so overwhelmed by the whole thing. But I didn't do it. You know, people used to tell me, and maybe I'll do this one day. I think I'm just too shy, which seems odd. You go, shy, how could you be? People tell me I'm really funny and I should have always done comedy, stand-up comedy. You know, and there's a part of me who would love to just kind of fool around on stage with stand-up comedy. But there's nothing between you and the audience. You're up there.
It's a very vulnerable spot.
It's a very vulnerable spot. But I like comedy. Comedy's fun. And maybe it's just a strain. My kids are comics. They're really comics. My parents were not comics. They were so serious. Maybe it was a reaction to really the seriousness.
You needed a good laugh.
Yeah.
So what have you done in Kalamazoo in theater?
So I worked at this. I did some civic things. I did Tartuffe, where I played Lady Purnell, I think it was. And I did Grey Gardens, which I consider kind of like. Grey Gardens was like Two Suns in the Sky, because Grey Gardens was a musical.
Yeah.
I hadn't sung for a long time. My voice is okay, you know, but okay, that's what it is. You know, I play old Edie, you know, Big Edie, I think her name is. I had to sing two very funny songs. And I had to actually work with the pit, you know, with the actual orchestra there, and be mic'd and the whole deal. And then just, and it was, Grey Gardens is a wonderful play. So that, to me, was the most frightening thing. Also, the lyrics were rhymed lyrics, so I couldn't make a mistake. I had to rhyme. So those I did. I did Reader's Theater at the Civic. I did a play in Pawpaw, in the Pawpaw Village Players that I loved. It was a British play. I did a play, two plays in Dwajak in the theater there. One I enjoyed the most was The Foreigner. I think it's very relevant to what's going on now. Yeah. But that one I enjoyed the most.
Have you ever thought about writing a play?
Years ago I did. Years ago. Years ago. But it is very difficult. I've always found I'm fairly good in dialogue. But the actuality of, I've never, and I don't think I want to do that next. If I do something past the children's book, I want to do nonfiction. I'm really hankering after nonfiction lately.
Ah, and what would it be on?
Should I give it away?
Yes, I would love for you to give it away.
This also, will I be brave enough? I'd like to go around and explore the statues in the United States and explore female statues.
Oh, interesting.
And their background.
That would be timely also because there's been a lot of talk about statues and the history that goes with them and which ones should stay up and which ones should come down. Would that be a part of the idea?
Yep. So I think, it is very interesting. I have to allow myself to just travel around, interview people, which I did with Two Suns in the Sky, take pictures. But I think it's very interesting. We really don't talk very much about statues devoted to women.
And that's true.
I'm very concerned with that and interested.
Are there any that you have your eye on that you think are most remarkable?
No, I mean, this is just an idea. I've not even gone past the idea with it. First, I'll finish this.
I endorse it.
Oh, okay. Want to give me the funding?
That I can't do. But, I think
first
that would be a wonderful idea.
We're putting our house up on the market, and first we have to move.
Where are you moving to?
Good question.
You're not leaving Kalamazoo, are you?
Yes, we're going out west. We are making a major move.
What's out west?
My son's in Silicon Valley. We can't afford that. So we're looking.
But you want to be closer.
Closer.
Is that where your grandchild is?
Yeah. So it's something we're talking about. I mean, we're sort of all over the place. We've talked about Chicago, too. My other son's in Chicago. Though both of us would like to get away from the snow.
Anything that you want to add that we haven't talked about that is close to your heart?
I would not call this close to my heart, but the book is available at Caffeinated Press and local bookstores. Let me start with that first, because I did do a reading at Michigan News, and Dean Hawk is just wonderful.
Oh, she is. Yeah.
And she, I'm sure
she's
she has,
an icon.
I'm sure she has quite a few of my books there, and I would love that they got sold and she would be able to. Yeah. She's doing fine, but it would be great to. She's just a wonderful person.
She is.
Though I would like to do more with this. It's hard when you're in a small press. It's hard to get, and poetry.
Yes.
Let's admit it. I mean, it's very challenging to get the publicity, to get books sold, to all of those things. And, it was many, many years of my life. And I think they're good poems. I think they're really good poems.
Yeah.
I mean, as any writer, I see places where I go, oh, I've repeated that word. I should not have repeated it there.
Some are worth repeating.
But yes, I'd like it out there for a while, if possible.
Well, thank you so much for coming in, Miriam. And hopefully this will add a little bit to the publicity measuring the
Marigolds. I appreciate it. I appreciate your having me here.